Good evening. This is the Hamnet Practice. It is February 22nd, about 8:06. Terry is on special duty tonight with the Planetarium in Denver. They have a special program going on all week, so she's been tied up there. So I'll be your substitute tonight. First thing I'd like to do is talk a little bit about the various factors that affect how your ham radio set's going to operate, how well, how efficiently, and so on. The first thing that really affects you is propagation. If you were sitting on top of a mountaintop, so you had no obstructions in any which direction, and you radiated some energy from a point, that energy was spread out in all directions so that that little unit of energy would be dissipated over a sphere. In other words, it would decrease in intensity as the radius squared. So we call that inverse square spreading. It goes as 1 over r squared. Now, there's no way to defeat that. That's one of the factors that you have to live with. Now, there are effects even in that space that can bother you. For example, airplanes up to even maybe 100 miles away can reflect a signal back to you. So as you're propagating your energy out and it comes back, the energy coming back can either add to the energy from whatever other source you have that you're talking to or detract from it. If they're exactly the same amplitude, but exactly out of phase, it will completely cancel it. The signal will disappear. If they're exactly in phase, it'll double it. That's where you get, like on FM radio, you'll get the flutter or picket fence sort of phenomenon. If you begin to get into typical situation for like UHF or VHF where you're on the ground, your line of sight, buildings, trees, any object that's in between you and the person that you're talking to or the other receiver can scatter the energy. And again, you'll have problems if you're stationary probably because your antenna is going to move a little. If you're in a car, you're going to have a picket fence in. Sorry, Doug, you're making a lot of noise. I have to mute you. So that can be a problem. Now, a third type of propagation now is ducting. You can think of some types of ducting as maybe being like a big fluorescent tube that's between you and it's just going around the earth completely and comes back to you, and you put energy into that duct, and it just propagates all the way around. It may skip. It may go out 700 to 1,200 miles, hit the ground, and bounce back up into that duct and just keep going all the way around. That's an ideal type of propagation, very low loss. Now, if you look at the layers around the earth and the atmosphere, the troposphere is the first 6 miles up above the earth. Now, if you have weather fronts or temperature inversions, sometimes your little UHF or VHF radio can get out to 300 miles or more. Not too common, but it can happen. It's far beyond the direct line of sight that you normally would get, of maybe 5, 10, 15 miles. Beyond that, you get the ionosphere. That ranges from 30 miles up to 260 miles up. And if you launch signals at some angle above the horizon and at frequencies that are right, if the frequency is too low, it's just absorbed in the atmosphere and lost. If it's too high, it doesn't see the duct and it shoots right on through it and out into space, so it's totally lost. But somewhere in between there is a channel with the right frequency where it'll get into that channel and just propagate like mad. Now, there are the three layers that are, well, maybe four, around the earth that are the most important. And let me pull the book up here. Or the D, E, F. And there's an F1 and F2. Now, F1 and F2 combine at night, or can, they don't always. They split up as two during the daytime. The D layer and sometimes the E layer pretty much absorb radio waves, so they're not too useful. But the lower part, or the upper part of the E layer and F1 and F2 above them, can give you this ducted propagation, which they call sky wave or skip. And that generally you need an HF transmitter. We've only really been dealing with UHF and VHF, which are higher frequencies. The HF bands are much lower in frequency. But with the right HF band, you can get into them, ducted propagation, and you can get these nice, long, very long ranges. Now, some of these effects on these ducts depend on day, night, season, that sort of thing, sunny area on the earth as opposed to not. They'll open up and they'll go away. They are not dependable, you might say. During the peak of the 11-year sunspot cycle, even VHF bending and ducting was possible, and you had really good ranges with it. You can also get your skip zone type propagation early summer or in midwinter, and you might get out to 700 miles to the first skip. I've been wondering, for example, I don't think I can make Florida from where I'm at. I end up on a 700-mile skip and from the middle of Pennsylvania down into probably Virginia for the first skip. Now, what can you do to capitalize on these types of propagation? I think Terry talked a little bit about polarization of electromagnetic waves. Normally, your VHF and UHF are vertically polarized. And since they travel short ranges, that polarization doesn't change. If you get into the HF bands where you've got longer range propagation, the polarization goes from vertical to horizontal and usually ends up some combination so that if you have either a vertical or a horizontal antenna, it should probably work equally well. But for your little handheld, you remember Terry talking about hold it straight up, and that means the antenna is vertical, plus you're getting more altitude, so you'll have better ranges. Now, there's different types of antennas. For example, my low-frequency antenna is a 137-foot-long dipole that's driven a little off-center. It has a fairly good gain, but it's very long and has to be 35 feet above the ground, so that kind of limits a lot of people's use of it. There are vertical dipole antennas you can use. That takes a pretty good height, like a tree, tall tree to hang it from, something like that. You can also use, like for HF on a mobile rig, they have antennas that you can mount on the back of, say, like an SUV. They have to be mounted vertically. And as you change bands, that antenna will move up and down so that it stays at the proper fraction of a wavelength so that it radiates well. Now, what can you do besides having a good antenna? Well, a good antenna works really, I should mention, two ways. It discriminates against noise while you're listening, and it puts the energy going out in the right direction for you. So it's a double gain. No, in addition to having a good antenna, also there's one thing more I forgot to mention. The cabling that you use between your HF rig or any rig and the antenna, when you have these large antennas, can become quite lossy if you use the smaller 8U cables. You can lose up 1, 2, maybe 3 dB, and that's a lot of energy just in the cable if you use the lossier type cables. Now, the other thing you can do to get signal farther out, other than use a good antenna, is to put more power out. Well, the power out increases your radiation by 10 log of the change in power from where you were. So if you doubled your power, you'd gain 3 dB. Well, that might be equal to what a simple dipole antenna might have. If you make your power five times as big, for example, you took your little Bofang and you ran it up to 40 watts, you'd have a 7 dB increase. Now, there are limits depending on your license and your antenna. A lot of antennas will get fried if you run them up too high. I think that one of mine is good for 1,000 watts, and I'm never going to hit anything near that. But you can, with a linear amplifier between your unit and the antenna, increase the power level. It's going to cost you. Those amplifiers are not cheap. Okay. There are a couple other things that I wanted to talk about tonight. One of them is not just, you know, getting to know some hams, get your license, and join either your local ham club, like ours is mine, is the Nittany Valley ham club, or the ARRL, the American Radio Relay League. Now, one of the advantages of joining the ARRL is you get a free monthly magazine. It's called QST. Now, I must admit that with all the magazines I get and the other things I do, I don't have much time to read, but I did kind of scan through this month. It was the annual antenna issue. And I found that there's a lot of good practical information in these magazines. They tell you how to build inexpensive antennas. They have all kinds of people. Hams are very inventive. And they love to tinker and play around. And so there are, I don't know, half a dozen articles here on how to build tri-band antenna, for example, for a 2 meter, 1.25 meter, 70 centimeter, be the UHF, VHF bands, and one in between. They have a vertical dipole. You remember I mentioned that a dipole is a good antenna. But like mine, 137 feet long horizontally, if I were to hang that vertically, I'd need a skyhook. But I see there's an article in here on what you can do with that length. And basically what you do is they call it a folded dipole. And that turns the antenna vertical and in the shape of a W, with one edge of the W up and the other edge down. So it still is long, but it's not nearly as high. So it takes like a 50-foot tower at the height for one end of the W and a 30-foot tower for the lower points to radiate out from. So it makes things doable. Now, that's not something you would find if you go to the antenna store and buy an antenna. But in QST, there it is all laid out, how to do it and that sort of thing. There was another article here that I thought was really neat. You know, they love to experiment. And I think I'll just read this article for you. It's called A Beach Ball Antenna Project. And it's written by Heidi Nielsen. She's KD2ESI. She says, ham radio enthusiasts may not be aware that radio is used in an artistic medium. I've come to the ham through this artistic route and recently created temporary art installations on Miami area beaches. Beach ball antennas. And she took these brightly colored beach balls and used them to develop her antenna, which she used to receive transmissions from the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, weather satellite. In her book, Transmission Arts, Artists, and Airwaves, so-and-so explains how an experimentation with radio can be an art form. And she goes on a little bit, and then she talks about designing the antennas. She says, because beaches are a place of relaxation and contemplation, marking where the land meets the sea, I see them as natural places to incorporate appreciation for Earth's vast atmospheric and orbital spaces through transmission art. I wanted to design antennas specifically for this environment that would fit into the scene, but with a twist. Beach balls seemed a natural choice, and I initially thought this form would be a good choice for portability. But a beach ball is basically a wind sail, so it needs to be anchored down, and inflating it is actually labor-intensive and time-consuming on the beach, where powered pumps typically can't be used. So the beach ball form became more conceptual and just for fun rather than practical. It was important for me in designing antennas that the shape of the beach ball was integrated with the structure of the antenna. That is, it wasn't simply a rigid antenna that was placed inside the beach ball, but the inflation of the ball was necessary to create the functioning antenna shape. I envisioned it like a string game of cat's cradle, where the outward pressure and position of the hands hold a flexible string in straight lines. In my case, this was a coax cable or a copper tape affixed to strips of vinyl glued to the interior of the beach ball. I chose three antenna designs to adapt, which are commonly used for receiving NOAA satellite transmissions at 137 megahertz. That's a little below the VHF, low end. The quadrifiler helix, QFH, and the Moxon rectangle and the double cross. She chose commercially available beach balls larger than the design of the antennas and calculated how the conductive parts of the antennas could be affixed to strips of non-conductive vinyl extending from interior sides of the beach balls. I then measured each inflated beach ball and marked the outside with tape where the affixed points should be on the interior, while concurrently carefully measuring and constructing flexible and shapeless vinyl antennas. I then cut open the beach ball, glued points on the beach ball interior to points on the flexible antenna, and resealed and reinflated the beach ball. After much trial and error, I learned a number of things. Fairly thick, less stretchy vinyl is better, which I purchased by the foot at a plastic store. Repair tape for vinyl doesn't work. Doesn't stretch enough for beach ball inflation. Adhesive specifically for vinyl works best. I found that using a vinyl patch with this adhesive worked better for inevitable leaks than only a liquid leak stop patch. To run the coax feed line through the beach ball, I used inflation valves poached from other beach balls. 6-inch party favors work nicely to fit 50 ohm coax in. Using this basic procedure, I was able to experiment with engaging sculptural forms. The double cross and double Moxon rectangular designs were fairly straightforward, while the spiraling twists of the QFH were harder to configure. I resolved the placement of the twisted loops in the QFH by creating spacers in the middle of the loops. In one design, by stacking two beach balls and running a coax through both, and in another by using small beach balls to maintain the space between the loops. All the designs, the antenna interior was visible through installed peephole windows or by using clear or translucent beach balls. I feared that the wiggly and stretchy nature of the inflated vinyl would not be precise enough for the antennas to function well, but they all received images from the NOAA weather station, and she shows you some pictures that she got from the satellite. In conclusion, the experience of using the beach ball antennas at a public beach was great. It was especially fun when people came by as a satellite passed overhead and were able to see the images of Earth emerge from the transmission line by line. This must be one that gives you the map as it goes over. people were definitely interested. One man phoned his girlfriend, who is a science teacher, and related our activity to her by video chat, and she was inspired to use the process in her office, or in her school, excuse me. Others were just interested to know that it's possible to collect images directly from satellites while relaxing on a beach. So that sort of thing, if you like to experiment, can be a lot of fun, other than the practical uses that we're trying to put our Bofangs and other ham gear to. Now, does anyone, was it John from Florida last week that had a little presentation? I don't see him. Is there anybody that would like to have any comments or questions for this evening? Wow, as usual, a whole host of questions coming up.
Jan, I apologize. This is Helena in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I got on late. I do apologize for that. Could you give me that website? It sounds so interesting.
Which website? I was reading from the QST monthly magazine.
Oh, it's in the magazine.
Yeah, you might go to www.arrl.org. They might even have excerpts from the magazine in there.
Okay, or subscribe to it. Okay, thank you very much. It sounds really fantastic.
This is John from Pennsylvania. AB3ZI checking in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, I AB3ZI. I'm calling on a different phone tonight, but I appreciated that presentation. That was very informative. I don't yet own an HF rig, and I've got very little HF operating experience. But I do hope to remedy that this year. Over.
Well, welcome to the club. I think Terry's probably the only one that's done much with an HF rig, and hers is temporarily down because she moved to a new apartment, and she doesn't have her antenna set up yet. So hopefully we can get a few more people with HF rigs and get them spread out over the country. Now, Wonder Ann in South Carolina, Spartanburg, is just a little outside of my skip range, which is unfortunate. It would have been nice to have people at about the typical skip ranges so we could talk one to the next and just pass it around, you know.
AB3ZI again. I'm learning about propagation myself, and I did encounter one piece of software. I think it's Radio Ham, not Ham Radio. I think it's Radio Ham. I tried to look it up online earlier, and I didn't find it under that title, but it's it models HF propagation, or actually any RF propagation. I saw a sample where it was used to, once again, with regard to a mesh network, it was modeling propagation between a number of radios in a small geographic area, and the user input some parameters like the location of the radio and the height. It's working with the topographic map, some antenna specs, and then the software can predict whether or not the radios can see each other. Very interesting stuff, and I think that particular package is free of charge, if I remember correctly.
Right. I remember when I was studying for the, I forget which one of the three exams it was, they listed websites which do the predictions for the various modes of propagation. And you could go there and plug in your location and that sort of thing, and it would give you the probability and launch angles and stuff like that and for the different propagation, which I thought was rather useful. I saved the sites. I don't have them pulled up at the moment, but they were free, and they're pretty much worldwide. So that would give you a good clue before you start out, what frequency you ought to be on and what angles you might try and launch from. So if you have an antenna that's not totally fixed. Britt, does anyone else have any comments or interests? No.
AB3ZI, one more time. I'll be brief. Just before the recording was started, two of the gentlemen were talking about talking about radio. One of them said that he was not able to pick up AM stations. if he had a handheld like the Bofang that are popular, that only demodulates FM.
Right.
And probably a lot of those handhelds only do FM and not AM demodulation. That gentleman would, I would encourage him to look into that particular aspect of the radio.
Mm-hmm. Very true. I know that, yeah, my Bofang does not have an AM band. I think it was Greg from Florida a few weeks ago mentioned that he had found a different antenna for the Bofang, and it folds down to about 9 to 10 inches long, and it extends up to, I think it was 30-some inches, and he'd found that it worked, much better than the little short antenna that it came with. And, little tips like that can increase your range considerably, and relatively expensively. I think they were like $10 a pop. So I picked up one for my wife's and for my Bofang. That's the sort of thing we need to bring up here to provide guidance for people, you know?
Absolutely. I a friend gave me a mag mount antenna that I use with my Bofang, and it's about 19 inches long, which is still too short, but it allows me to reach a couple of local nets that I wasn't able to reach with the stock antenna. Once spring arrived and the trees started growing some leaves, I lost connection to a couple repeaters here locally without that mag mount antenna. And I use it inside. I just put on sheet of metal. So I'm using that inside, and that's worked out well. But like I said, that's still too short. You know, for 2 meters, that's even a half wave antenna. You know, we're talking about 3 feet long there, 1 meter,
right,
for the 2 meter band.
Yep, that's true. Anyone else have any comments for the evening?
Or can you hear me?
We certainly can.
Yeah, this is Bruce. You know, I was talking before. It's not with the Bofang. I downloaded one of those software-defined radios.
Right.
And it works fine, but I don't get anything on AM.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody have an idea about that? I know the Bofang, that's strictly. But this thing, this SDR, it does AM, FM, single sideband, double sideband, continuous, wide FM and narrow FM. It does all of them. And when you go to where it is AM, it automatically switches to AM, but I never can get anything on it. I should at least be able to get local stations. I get the ham bands and the weather channel and the local FM stations, all of them come in fine. Anybody got a suggestion?
Well, I think the detector is different, would be different for the AM section and for all the other ones. So that detector may be not operating properly.
That's what I think. It may be the thing I have is bad because everything else works. But I sent a letter to the manufacturer and see what he says, but that's what I think it might be.
Mm-hmm.
But those things are very good if somebody wants to fool with it. They're only $25 on Amazon, but they're not plug and play. It's quite involved to get them. You know, you got to download software and unzip it, and it's a little bit complicated the way you install it.
Yep. I noticed way back when I was looking at them, and they do have some fantastic displays on them and stuff. It's all software, you know?
It's all software. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a real big bang for your buck, but it's just not very portable.
No. But if you put it on a portable
base, yeah.
But, they have them that you can record and transmit, but they go up $700,
$800. Sure. Yep. Yeah, your software, you still need a transmitter if you're going to broadcast any.
Well, no, those $700, what you need, an antenna. But everything's in the one. I mean, the one I got for $25 is strictly a receiver. You know, there's no transmitting.
Right. Yeah, you wouldn't have a transmitter for that amount of money.
Yeah. It's amazing what you get for $25. They give you two antennas with it, a real short one. One is about 3 feet, and the other one is about 12 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I can get all the local ham bands, and, they come in fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, That was my latest toy I'm playing with.
Yep. That's good. Keep it up. Check it out. Let us know how it works, you know?
Yeah, I just sent a letter to the manufacturer, an email, and see what he says back. I think it's just it's got a bad unit in there someplace, you know?
Yep. Any other comments?
That's all I have.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for that. I know initially when we first started, Terry took a look at those, and there were some that are up in the $100 to $200 range. And man, the displays and all that on them were fantastic, you know. They were as good as anything out there in terms of displays, and I think the receiver sensitivity was very, very good as well. But the transmitter begins to be a little bit of a problem if you want to use it two-way. But for a base unit, you know, you buy a transmitter and you're all set. Might be a lot cheaper than buying a pre-made rig, you know?
Yeah, you know, just for, you know, the beginnings here, getting started, it gives them something, because you can get all the bands. I'd have to get a better antenna, but it has, you know, the 6-meter band, the 10-meter band. It goes from 50 kilohertz up to 1.2 gigahertz mm-hmm. and everything in between.
Well, just get your wire out and start running it, you know, cut it to length, and you can make antennas very cheaply.
I know. I live in a condominium, though. We can't put up outside antennas.
And that's a definite downer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a problem. I live out in the country on a farm, so I can run a wire wherever I want to run it, you know.
Yeah, but that's what you need, a long wire to get some of them, right? You know.
Right. And it really isn't that critical a shape and so on and how high above the ground it is if you just want to listen, you know. Okay, we're nearing the end of our time. Does anyone have any other comments before we close down for this evening? And Terry will be back with us next week with another interesting tale, I'm sure.
Oh, you know, there's one thing. I was on my house phone. And it wouldn't let me unmute it. I'm on my cell phone now. I finally hung up and I dialed in here because I couldn't talk. It says you had muted the whole conference and I couldn't unmute it.
No, I didn't mute anybody tonight. They were
mine was muted and it wouldn't let me unmute it. I called in on the other phone and it's fine. I don't understand.
I don't either. You know, these panels and free conference, we've had troubles periodically. As a function of time here, and sometimes it behaves itself very well, and sometimes people call in, they can't even get on, you know, and they keep calling and calling, even the alternate number, and then some people can't seem to get unmuted, and some don't have any trouble at all, you know, really weird. I only see one person right now, and I know who that is. It's a fellow with a squeaky chair, and he's muted, so we don't have to listen to the squeak, so.
So you don't see the rest of it? You don't see me on there?
I see you talking right now, yeah, and you're unmuted.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, I guess that's it for this week. If anybody else got something. But.
Okay. Well, anybody else want to make a comment? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay. This is KC3HVA, Pennsylvania Jan. We're signing off for the Hemnet practice for this week. Turn off the recorder.